Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Okay, I just want to read a few remaining verses from what we were reading yesterday. We didn't finish completely from 5th chapter, 2nd part, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Both Narada and Uddhava are instructing Gopakumara about the glories of Vrindavan and the devotees of Vrindavan. And Narada is making a point of emphasizing the greatness of Uddhava. So Uddhava, we just read yesterday, it was... Narada was starting to speak about how Uddhava is the greatest of the devotees of Godhead. And he compared him, Narada compared Uddhava even to the goddess of fortune and Sri Rukmini, first queen of Krishna. Okay, and so there are a few more verses here along that line. Narada speaking to Gopakumar about Uddhava. Bo Gopa Putra Rajanata Mitrahe Tat Prema Bhakti Pravaroyam Uddhavaha Tat Sara Karunya Vishesha Bhagiyatas Tasam Raje Prema Bharam Tam Aikshata. O son of a cowherd, O friend of the Lord of Raja, this Uddhava is Krishna's most exalted devotee in pure love. Greatly fortunate, he has attained the essence of the Lord's mercy. In Vraja, he has witnessed the extent of the gopis' love for Krishna. So there are different levels of devotees of Krishna. Some do not have pure devotion. Their devotion is mixed with motivations of enjoying the material world or of becoming liberated from the material world. Pure devotee doesn't care to try to exploit this world, and he doesn't care even to become free from this world. He just wants to satisfy Krishna. But there are Karma Mishra Bhaktas, Jnana Mishra Bhaktas. Many Vaishnavas, especially other sampradayas, are practicing mixed devotional service. Great sages, demigods, many of them are devotees of Krishna or the incarnations of Narayan and Krishna. Demigods generally are all Vaishnavas. Even some asuras are Vaishnavas. Many sages, some of them are impersonalists, some of them are Shaivites or have some other religious affiliation, but many sages also are Vaishnavas. But the demigods tend to be Karma Mishra Bhaktas. They still want to control and enjoy the material world, and they're attached to their positions and they're proud. Therefore, their devotion to Krishna is not pure. And we see they are constantly quarreling with one another, they are constantly harassed by their demons, the asuras. Of course, Krishna comes and defends them, fights on behalf of the demons against the asuras. But the fact that these demigods have enemies is a symptom that they're not pure devotees. And the sages, many of them are devotees, are Vaishnavas, but not pure Vaishnavas. They're Jnana Mishra Bhaktas. They recognize the supremacy of the personality of Godhead. They are trying to serve him, but they still have this desire to be liberated, moksha. And very often, even a Vaishnav will forget that moksha is not the goal of ultimate goal of life. That is a fifth goal of life, prema bhakti. One may be satisfied to serve the Lord in this world and not be too concerned about getting out of it. That's karma mishra bhakti. One's satisfied, oh, I'm serving Krishna, and proud of it. Therefore, the desire to give up material attachment is lacking. That's karma mishra bhakti. Or one may have a strong desire for liberation, but that's a selfish desire, and that devotee does not recognize that the pure consciousness is to be willing to remain in this world if Krishna desires that. If there's some service to do for Krishna, then even the ambition of liberation must be given up. So one who was not mature enough to realize that, he's Jnana Mishra Bhakta. So then we have Shuddha Bhaktas, who are free. This is defined by Rupa Goswami in the beginning of Bhaktivedanta Samhita Sindhu. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma arya anavritam. Anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktirutama. Uttama bhakti, or what can equivalent terminology is Shuddha bhakti, pure devotional service, not mixed, is by definition not mixed. Free from ulterior motives, specifically not covered by the motives of jnana, karma, or etc., yoga, whatever, other kinds of motives you can come up with, although basically there are two categories, jnana and karma, karma and jnana. Karma first, because most persons, their motive is karma. Only a few, small minority, are seriously interested in liberation. The karmis are much more numerous than the jnanis. Anukulyena krishnanu shilanam. Krishna anushilanam. Trying, working, practicing to serve and satisfy Krishna in a favorable way. That's pure devotional service. Just to be obsessed with Krishna is not necessarily pure devotional service. Kamsa was totally obsessed. Shishupal was totally obsessed with Krishna. But unfavorably, inimically. It must be favorable, and then it's pure devotional service. So that's the third level. But beyond that, there's prema bhakti. Because one may be practicing without motivation, but until one develops very strong faith and conviction, and that cannot occur until one gives up all material misgivings and bad habits, anartha nivritti, then nishta, then you can move toward prema. Then love can awaken in the heart, first as a small sprout in the heart, then it can blossom and grow. But among prema bhaktas is also different levels. So among the prema bhaktas outside of Raja, for those who are not familiar with Raja bhakti, Uddhava is the greatest. In other words, as far as up to the level of Dwarka, Uddhava is the greatest devotee. Narada and Uddhava are now, the two of them, conspiring to inform Gopakumara that there's something even better, that there's a higher level of devotional service that's found only in Vrindavan Dham. Uddhava's great qualification is, although he's the greatest devotee outside of Raja, he has a very strong appreciation for the devotion of Raja, and he's capable of teaching that to Gopakumara and many other disciples. Krishna said, let him stay in this world to teach confidential knowledge about me, not just general knowledge about me that you'll find in the Upanishad. You can read Shvetashvatara Upanishad. It describes devotional service. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tata gurau. That for one who has implicit devotion, the word is used, bhakti. This is Upanishad, but the word bhakti is used. Para bhakti, unconditional bhakti, for the Supreme Lord and for his spiritual master. This is our process. That we have to worship Krishna by approaching him through his representatives, through his devotees. So this is the process of devotional service, but it is jnana mishra. The devotion taught in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, even though the word bhakti is used, and even para bhakti it's called, it's actually jnana mishra bhakti. If you read the whole Upanishad, you'll find that it's really appealing to the motivation of liberation, and not so much about trying to understand what Krishna wants and satisfying that desire. So Uddhava knows this higher secret that is not taught even in the Vedas, even in the Upanishads, which are the philosophical essence of the Vedas. Okay, and Narada is now revealing what is the secret. He knows about, he has attained the essence of the Lord's mercy. In Vraja, he has witnessed the extent of the gopis' love for Krishna. Then the next verse. Tasam prasad atishayasya gocharas tatsangato vismita Krishna sangamaha nirdharam etam vyavaharam idvisham kurvan vadedyat tadativa sambhavet. Uddhava received the gopis' mercy, so much so that in their company he even forgot about his association with Krishna. Thus, whatever he concludes about them, and whatever he does or says, will be altogether fitting. By virtue of Uddhava's very advanced devotional realization, because he's sincerely following in the footsteps of Krishna's greatest devotees, therefore, whatever he says or does must be accepted as authoritative. In other words, Uddhava has to be accepted as guru. You may not come in contact with someone who is guru, so then he's not functionally your guru. But when you come in contact with such a person, when Krishna arranges that you get his association, you must accept him as guru. Prahlad Nandamaraj quoted Upadeshamrita this morning in Bhagavatam class. If you meet someone who's chanting Hare Krishna, whoever has ever vibrated the name of Krishna on his tongue, even if he stopped chanting, you have to respect him within your mind. And then Dikshasti Chet Praniti Bish Chabajantamisham. And if someone is properly initiated, is a proper disciple of an authentic spiritual master, and is engaged in the process of worshipping Krishna, he's practicing proper sadhana bhakti, you must bow down to him and consider him your Prabhu. But if you meet someone who's completely free from envy, who has no other desire but to satisfy Krishna, such a Paramahamsa, you must be ready to accept his guru. If you can only know about him from hearsay, then okay. But if you meet such a person, you must be ready to give your whole life to that person. So Uddhava is being defined as being a perfect example of that category of Paramahamsa. There's a commentary to that verse I just read. The commentary says, Uddhava, being the best prema bhakta of Lord Vrajanath, of the five categories, this is the third category. There, among the devotees in Vraja, there are two higher categories of devotees. Outside of Vraja, he's the best. Uddhava, being the best prema bhakta of Lord Vrajanath, is blessed with Krishna's exceptional mercy. Krishna has drawn Uddhava very close to himself because he considers Uddhava especially worthy of his kindness. Uddhava attained this perfection by seeing in Vrindavan the exalted love of the gopis that the gopis have for Krishna, and by obtaining the gopis' blessings. Not only did Uddhava see the gopis, but he properly showed his respect to the gopis. He delivered Krishna's message to them. He reciprocated in such a way that they were glad to give him their blessings. He did service for them by instructing them according to Krishna's message. And therefore, they accepted him as guru, and they gave him his blessing, their blessings. Even though they're superior, they received instruction from him, and they gave him their blessings in response. Receiving their blessings, his life became perfect. Receiving the blessing of the gopis. Another thing is, the verse uses the term, no it doesn't, it's the commentary. It says that he's the greatest prema bhakta, this is not in Goswami's words, of Lord Vrajanath, the Lord of Raja. But Krishna, Uddhava never met Krishna, never saw Krishna in Vrindavan. He only knows Krishna in Dwarka. He knows Dwarkanath, not Vrajanath. Mathura and Dwarka. So, Mathuranath. Mathurish. He went to Vrindavan, but he went after Krishna had left the place. So he knows Krishna only outside of Vrindavan. But Krishna is Krishna. He's the same person. Krishna in the Lord of Vaikuntha is Krishna's Vilas expansion. Krishna in Mathura and Dwarka is the same person. And there are devotees who live outside of Vrindavan who know that fact. Even though their own position, they're not fortunate to be in Vrindavan, to be serving Krishna in that and those pastimes, still they know that Krishna, that his supreme position, his original position, is as the Lord of the Gopis and the Lord of Vrindavan. Okay, so I'm sorry, continuing the commentary here. Sanatana Goswami says, the Gopis confided to Uddhava their most confidential ecstasies. In Uddhava's own words, speaking in Bhagavatam chapter 47, tomorrow's home reading assignment, Sarvatma bhavo dikrito bhavatinam adhokshaje virahena mahabhaga mahame nugrahakritaha. This is Uddhava speaking to the gopis. You have rightfully claimed the privilege of unalloyed love for the transcendental Lord. O most glorious gopis, indeed, by exhibiting your love for Krishna in separation from him, you have shown me great mercy. Srila Sridhar Swami, in his commentary on this verse, gives the paraphrase. Bhagavat prema sukha padarshanena mamaiva mahan anugraha kritaha. By showing the joy of your love for the Supreme Lord, you have done me a great favor. Sridhar Swami's commentary on this. And then being in the company of the gopis and remaining in Gokula for a long time strongly affected Uddhava, so much so that he forgot his association with Krishna, with whom he had been friends since childhood. Remember, the devotion of Mathura Dwarka is sambandhamaya. It is primarily focused on the concept of Krishna's being, having a relationship with Krishna, especially a family relationship. Whereas the prema of Vraja Bhakti transcends that. It doesn't matter what the relationship is. It's all the bhava, the rasa, that matters. It's rasatmaka. Rasamaya is the term used. One last verse here. Shvapalka putro bhagavat pitrivyaha sa nirasa jnana vishushka cheta vridho dayar dran tarata vihina kamsasya dautye birato vrajayan. Akrura, son of Shvapalka and paternal uncle of Lord Krishna, was an old man whose heart had dried up from lifeless knowledge. So devoid was his heart of the softness of mercy that when he came to Vraja, as a diligent order carrier of Kamsa. Now, this is Uddhava's, who's speaking here? This is Narada's ecstasy, to criticize such an exalted devotee as Akrura. Actually, another very intimate servant of Krishna, but to compare him to Uddhava, he's criticizing. Narada is criticizing Akrura. Commentary. Akrura's name means not cruel. But by taking Krishna away from Vrindavan, he committed very cruel offenses against the Vrajabasis. He may have been Krishna's uncle, But according to Uddhava, his heart was completely dried up by knowledge, untouched by the rasas of devotional service. Being an old man, Akrura could not even pretend externally to be a connoisseur of spiritual rasas. Thus, having no appreciation for the ecstatic mood of Vraja Prema, he could accept the task of dragging Krishna away from Vraja. Of course, in Akrura's defense, we have to remind everyone that when he crossed the border into Vrindavan, he immediately, fell into a trance of ecstasy, rolled on the ground. He was ecstatic. Even before he arrived, he was constantly thinking about getting the opportunity to see Krishna. This is not actually a materialistic or a dry jnani. But Narada is in his ecstasy, expressing this unfavorable comparison of Akrura to Uddhava. Any comments or questions? No? Yeah. Go ahead. And his devotees. Not saying that he didn't have respect for Krishna's devotees.
Akrura. Yeah? Seems to be preoccupied more with Krishna.
With Krishna than with his devotees? Well, compared to Uddhava, maybe. I mean, Uddhava understands, the value of devotees' associations better than anyone else. I think Akrura also is, he's not a Kanishta Bhakta, who only worships the deity and doesn't appreciate the Vaishnava. He's not on that level. But just compared to Uddhava, he looks bad. And poor Akrura, he's something of a scapegoat. He got in trouble over the Shamantaka jewel also. Yeah. Conspiring to murder the father of Krishna's wife. But actually he's a devotee of Krishna, he's been put into a few circumstances that make him look bad.
Yeah. You mentioned two terms, Rasamai and Sambandamai.
Yeah, Sambandamai, Rasamai. They're in Bhaktivedanta Sindhu.
What does it mean,
Maya?
Maya?
Maya, yeah, based on. One of the meanings of the suffix Maya, is prachurya, predominance. That's one of the meanings of Maya. So in this, that's what's appropriate for those two words. That in one of these kinds of devotion, the relationship is prominent. In the other kind, the rasa is more prominent. The mood.
Dominance.
Yeah. Because the mood, if the relationship is more prominent, then the mood follows the relationship. According to your relationship, you're supposed to have a certain suitable mood. But when the mood is predominant, then you can ignore the relationship and act contrary to it.
Is it the same word as an undermine of yourself?
Yeah.
Or is it yanamaya?
That's the same suffix, yeah.
It's
an undermine. There are other meanings. There are more than one meaning of the suffix maya. It can also mean consisting of. Yeah. I can say dugdamaya, made of milk. There's various milk products, we say in English. So in Sanskrit, you can say dugdamaya, something produced out of milk. Milk is the ingredient of it. So maya can mean that's the ingredient. Swarnamaya, I have a golden, ring. It's made out of gold. That's called swarnamaya. So maya can mean made out of, but it can also mean in which something is prominent. Two different meanings. Yes, it's also the same suffix. I don't remember. Sorry, I don't exactly remember which meaning of Maya is supposed to apply to that. That's the five, the five shells, the five coverings of the actual self. Like, I think this body is myself. Or if I'm on a mental platform, I think my mind is the self. Anamoy, manomoy, like that. There are five different concepts of who the person is. And then the spirit soul is actually vigyanamoy. And then the super soul is anandamoy. I don't remember the commentaries on that Taittiriya Upanishad. I don't remember the Vaishnava commentaries which meaning of Maya they specify there. So I don't want to guess on that. I don't want to speculate. The word is versatile. The suffix Maya has three or four different meanings. Hare Krishna. Okay, we read this. Akrura compared, Uddhava compared to all the other devotees of, especially of Dwarka and Mathura, he's the greatest. There's nobody else that Krishna, Akrura was sent to Vrindavan too, but he was sent on the order of Kamsa, because Narada is talking here, it's his fault that Kamsa even got the idea to send Akrura. Yeah, so he should speak. So Akrura, if he shows up then again in Vrindavan, everyone's going to, be angry at him. We read yesterday, if you've read your homework assignment, at the end, everyone gets up in the morning and sees a chariot, and the gopis are wondering, the elder gopis are wondering, did Akrura come back again? What does he want to do with us now? Kamsa's dead. Maybe he wants to kill us all and offer our flesh to Kamsa's funeral ceremony. Yeah, so Akrura would not be welcome back in Vraja. He's not the person to send. Uddhava is the only person to send. And then we're going to... Yes, any other comments?
Does Uddhava accompany Krishna in his pastimes throughout the universe, you say, like Arjuna?
I don't know of any mention of that outside of what Uddhava does with Krishna outside of his manifest pastimes, I don't know. Traveling. He traveled with Krishna when Krishna visited other places outside of Dwarka. He sometimes went on trips with Krishna, but as far as after Krishna wraps up his pastimes, traveling in other planets, I don't know. Do you know something?
So in the spiritual world, Uddhava is just in Dwarka.
It's said that he's an eternal associate of Krishna in Dwarka, in the spiritual world.
So his pastime of visiting Gokul, that's only in Gokul, wouldn't take place in the spirit.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, generally, Goloka in the spiritual sky and Gokula are identical. There's only slight differences. There may be some pastimes that only occur on the earth. I don't know whether Uddhava visits Goloka Vrindavan or not. I don't know. It's not described in the things I've read. Yeah. I would say why not? There's only slight differences between the two Vrindavans in the spiritual world on the earth. And I don't see why such an important devotee as Uddhava would be excluded from visiting Goloka Vrindavan. I just don't know any description of it. Okay. Now we're going to look at what we read last night for homework. Uddhava visiting Vrindavan on Krishna's request. Chapter 46, the whole chapter describes Uddhava coming to Vrindavan and meeting with Krishna's parents. And then chapter 47 goes on to Uddhava visiting the gopis. The etiquette is, first you visit Krishna's parents. They're the elders. It's only proper to visit them first. Even though Krishna, his message is primarily for the gopis. His parents, Yashoda and Nanda, are surviving somehow on the expectation that someday Krishna will come back. That he promised to come back. So Krishna doesn't have to give as much attention to them as he has to give to the gopis. The gopis don't believe him. This Krishna is a cheat, and so they're not convinced by Krishna's promise to come back. So there has to be a special effort to console the gopis for a Kuru's message. The message being sent after Kuru's. The message Uddhava is carrying is primarily for the gopis. But first of all, the proper thing, the etiquette, is to first visit Krishna's parents. So that's described in chapter 46.
Let me pick this up here.
Okay. In the first verse of this chapter, Uddhava is introduced. We already know him from the third canto, but now we're all the way in the tenth canto. The reader may have forgotten about him, so he's introduced again. Shishuka Uvacha, it's 10:46:1. Vishninam Pavaro Mantri Krishnasya Daitaksaka Shishyo Brihaspate Sakshad Udhavo Purisattamaha. So, best of all the Vrishnis, or as is translated here, the best advisor, Mantri, among all the Vrishnis. It's a little ambiguous. You can take it as absolutely he's the best of all the Vrishnis, and he's also Krishna's advisor, whatever, or he's the best advisor, whatever. This is not Prabhupada's translation. This is the BBT translation. So you don't have to accept it absolutely if you don't want to. The supremely intelligent Uddhava was the best counselor of the Vrishni dynasty, a beloved friend of Sri Krishna, and a direct disciple of Brihaspati. But it's mentioned in the purport. I don't remember whose. I mean, we didn't make this up. It comes out of somebody's commentary. I don't remember, just not said here whose. That the Harivamsa states that Uddhava is actually the son of one of the brothers of Vasudeva, Devabhaga. That Upagava is actually the same as Vasudeva's brother. Okay, so we accept Harivamsa as authoritative. It's one of the few bhakti shastras, bona fide scriptures that are primarily focused on Krishna's pure devotional service. Not except on as the same level of authority as the Bhagavatam, but if it doesn't contradict the Bhagavatam specifically, we can accept what the Harivamsa says.
Who's the author?
Vyasadeva. Because the Harivamsa is one of the appendixes to the Mahabharata. So actually it was spoken by Vaishampayana, Vyasadeva's disciple. When he spoke Mahabharata, then Janamejaya wasn't satisfied. He wanted an encore. So, you know, after a concert, everyone wants to hear some more. So the encore, the appendix, was the Harivamsa. Harivamsa means the family of Krishna. It's description of the dynasty leading up to Krishna. Just like in the Bhagavatam, there's description of Harivamsa. But this Harivamsa describes Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, in Dwarka, a few other things. Some things not connected with Krishna are also there. There's some glorification of Durga there also in the Harivamsa. But it's a very devotional book, and there are some things, some topics described, some events that are not described in the Bhagavatam. For example, when Krishna, we read in the Bhagavatam how Krishna was convinced by Satyabhama to try to get the Parijata tree from the heavenly planets. What we're told in Harivamsa, in addition, is that when Krishna first went to request, he didn't just go fighting. He first of all went and asked Indra, "Can you give me this tree? My wife's asking for it." Indra considers himself the older brother of Vishnu, because Vamanadeva is residing in the heavenly planets, and he's the younger brother of Indra. He's Upendra. So he's thinking of Krishna as incarnation of Vamanadeva. You know, this is my younger brother coming, asking me for something. So he spoke back to Krishna in the mood of an older brother. He says, "I'm sorry, you know, I'd like to give you what you want, but don't you understand, this is a heavenly tree. It's not allowed for anyone to possess it on the earth. And if I give it to you, this will violate the order established by Brahma, you know, that to send something like this from the heavenly planets down to the earth. It's, you know, a violation of the order of the universe. It's not proper. And maybe Krishna you know, you're too much under the influence of these women. Yeah, that you're letting your wife, order you around like this. So therefore, I'm not going to give it to you. And then there was a fight. But anyway, this interchange between Indra and Krishna is described in the Harivamsa. So there are some things in the Harivamsa that are very interesting. We generally can accept it, but if we find some contradiction with the Bhavatam, then we have to say, okay, this is some other day of Brahma. You know, it's not the same pastimes. This I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's mentioned anywhere else that Deva Bhaga, Vasudeva's brother, is actually Uddhava's father. But okay, it said that's said in the Harivamsa. And we put it, and it's mentioned in either Jiva Goswami's or Vishnu Chakravarti's commentary on this Bhavat, on the 10th canto.
Vyasa Deva is the author, but you were saying about his disciple Jaimini spoke in
that. No, Vaishampayana.
Vaishampayana.
Spoke the Mahabharata, the famous Mahabharata, you know, that's read in India, was spoken by Vaishampayana. There's there are several versions of Mahabharata. Shukadev Goswami spoke the Mahabharata to the Gandharvas in 6 million verses. There's another version that was, and Vaishampayana spoke to King Janamejaya, the son of Parikshit, in 125,000 verses, Mahabharata. But Janamejaya heard the Mahabharata a second time, this time from a different disciple of Vyasadeva, from Jaimini. It's described by Sanatana Goswami that this Jaimini Mahabharata is more devotional. Krishna is more prominent in the Jaimini Mahabharata. Because in the Mahabharata that we know, Krishna is always in the background. You know, he's just a friend of the Pandavas. And only in the Bhagavad Gita and a few other places are we reminded that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, the Pandavas, Yudhishthira, Arjuna, you know, they bring up this point once in a while. But Krishna is not very much up in the front in the Mahabharata that we know. But in Jaimini's Mahabharata, Krishna is much more glorified. But that Mahabharata is lost. We don't have it. But Srila Sanatana Goswami, you know, great sages can recover lost shastras. That's what a rishi is. Someone who hears Vedic mantras that nobody else knows in human society. In his meditation, he receives a mantra and then he speaks it to his disciples, and that's how we receive the Vedic mantras, from the Vedic rishis. They're not the authors of these mantras, Vedic hymns. They're the receivers, like a television transponder. The program's originating from, you know, Mumbai, but it's being passed by these microwave transponders from one place to another. You know, and here in Navadvip, they're receiving the television program from Calcutta, from Bombay. Like that, the Vedic mantras are coming from Vaikuntha, from the breath of Narayan, but the rishis receive them in meditation, and they transmit them to the human society. So a rishi is competent to recover a lost shastra by his meditation. Sanatana Goswami is one of the intimate shaktis of Radha Govinda. Yeah, he's one of the six Goswamis, so he's an intimate servant in Madhurya Rasa. So he's better than any rishi. He has if a rishi has that power, he has the power. Sanatana Goswami. So what he did is he recovered not the whole Jaimini Mahabharata, but the appendix, just like the Harivamsa is the appendix to Vaishampayana's Mahabharata. Brihad Bhagavatamrita is the appendix, the lost and recovered appendix of Jaimini's Mahabharata, spoken by Jaimini to Janamejaya. And in that conversation between Jaimini, rishi, disciple of Vyasadeva, and King Janamejaya, the son of Parikshit, Jaimini tells the narration of the conversation between Parikshit and his mother, Uttara, just before Parikshit left his body. That's the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that we have, you know, written by, you know, with the name of Sanatana Goswami on it, but Sanatana Goswami says he didn't write it. That it's actually the ancient lost scripture. Then he wrote his own commentary on it. That's what we're reading here. It's Sanatana Goswami's commentary. Okay, so the Harivamsa is in the same category. It's appendix to the Mahabharata that we have.
Eventually, are included by one of the...
Well, it's what, it's considered a Purana. Vyasadeva edited all the Puranas. Because, maybe we're getting off the topic, but the Puranas are kept in the heavenly planets in one big volume. The celestial Purana is 1 billion verses long. There's only one of them. All the Puranas are put together in one volume of 1 billion verses. And they still exist on the heavenly planets. But every Dwarpa Yuga, whoever's the Vyasadeva in each Dwarpa Yuga, there's a different Vyasadeva every the end of every Dwarpa Yuga. He condenses, makes an abridged version of the Puranas for the human society in Kali Yuga, 400,000 verses long, 18 different Puranas. In addition, there are extra Puranas, secondary Puranas, that are edited by Vyasadeva, all taken out of the original 1 billion verses. So there are 18 Upapuranas and more Upapuranas, 18 major Upapuranas, and there's, we know of at least 85 of them that manuscripts exist of, secondary Puranas. Harivamsa is one of the 18 major Upapuranas. So Vyasadeva's the editor. Suta Goswami spoke them all at Naimisharanya. And they were recorded, but written down later on. But they're actually, Vyasadeva is not even the author. They existed before in the unabridged version. Okay, anyway, here's Uddhava introduced. Most intelligent. But his intelligence is not material. His intelligence is transcendental. And that's his qualification. He's expert diplomat. He knows how to deal with things tactfully. That's why he can be the advisor in the court. He knows how to deal with political, difficult situations where people's feelings can be hurt if you say the wrong thing. Or you can get in trouble if you say the wrong thing. So therefore, Uddhava is the best person. Being the most clever, diplomatic, he's the person to send to the gopis. Because if you tell the gopis one thing wrong, they can commit suicide. He has to be very careful how he deals with the gopis. But because he's the most bodhisattva, he's qualified to do the job. So, Krishna, one day in Mathura, took the hand of Uddhava, his friend. Bhaktam ekantinam, ekanti, exclusive devotee, someone who has no selfish interest, someone who can be trusted completely by Krishna. Krishna took the hand of that Uddhava, and feeling an anxiety for his surrendered devotees in Vrindavan, he spoke to him. Please go to Vrindavan. I have a message for you to carry. Please try to satisfy my parents, and then go to the gopis because they're barely hanging on to their lives in the anxiety of Viraha Bhava. And you have to deliver a message from me to them. Yes, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. What is the word? Is the word gentle there? Ndayitaha. Yeah. Yeah, he's not duplicitous. He's not... nobody's going to criticize him that he's cruel the way they're criticizing a Kura. So, then Krishna briefly describes the condition of the gopis. Their qualification of the gopis, as Krishna describes it here, is that they've risked and sacrificed everything for Krishna's pleasure. They have no selfish concern. They're ready to sacrifice their own respectable position. They're just village girls, but even in Vedic society, even village girls have their sense of decency. This is the glory of the Vedic system, the Vedic social system, that not only the people on top, but everybody has a sense of respect for himself. A Shudra is proud of being a servant. A Vaishya is proud of doing his Vaishya duty. So these simple coward girls, they've got their respect, and they're sacrificing that. They're very, in the real sense, risking being rejected by their families for dallying the way they do with Krishna. So the fact that the gopis have abandoned everything, renouncing ordinary happiness in this life as well as religious duties necessary for happiness in the next life, Krishna feels that he owes himself to the gopis. And he feels obliged, he feels in debt, that he has nothing to pay them back with. So therefore, he cannot tolerate the fact that they're suffering in his separation, and he wants to try to do something. He can't easily just go back to Vrindavan. Now he's caught up in his obligations to his other devotees. He was enticed by Akrura. Actually, it was Akrura convinced Balaram. Akrura was also diplomatic. He didn't try to convince Krishna's parents. They're too attached. But he went to Krishna's brother and presented arguments why Krishna has to be allowed to go to Mathura. Devaki and Vasudev are in definite danger of being killed by Kamsa. All the other devotees of Krishna in Mathura are in great danger. Krishna has to come to protect them. So Akrura convinced Balaram, and therefore Krishna was allowed to go. Anyway, Krishna says, I promised I'd come back to them, but I can't do that. I've got my obligations here. At least for now, I can't come back. So, Uddhava, you have to go. To save their lives, you have to go and talk to them and deliver my message. So, Uddhava, without questioning, without expressing any doubt or demanding any reasons why, accepted the order and immediately mounted his chariot and set off for Vrindavan. He arrived at sunset, or a little before sunset. This is Goduli Vela, the time of the late afternoon when the cows are returning home from their grazing. In India, you see the cows always accompanied by some children with a big stick. Yeah. But we hear that in Vraja, everything is so peaceful and safe, secure, that the cows can go off by themselves, wander all day, and they come home by themselves, even without being tended. Anyway, whether someone's driving them home or they're just coming home on their own, this is the time. It's time for milking, and all the cows know, even if nobody tells them, they know it's time to go back and give milk to their calves and get fed themselves. 5 o'clock, 5:20 in the afternoon. Every day, it's on schedule. This is the Goduli Vela. It's the time of the day when the paths are covered with the dust from the hooves of the calves walking home. This is the most auspicious time to arrive somewhere when the cows are coming home. Now, if you go to Mathura on the Kalka Mail and it's not late, you'll arrive in Tundla. You arrive back in Vrindavan just around sunset. Get to Tundla about 4:30 and then take a taxi to Mathura. And you'll get home, at least to Mathura, just about the right time as the cows are coming home. That's the moment that Uddhava arrived in Vrindavan, most auspicious time. And it's amazing. After Krishna described the devastating condition of the gopis, you can imagine what Vrindavan must look like. You can see what Vrindavan looks like today. Devastated. Practically a desert. And it became like that quickly after Krishna disappeared. know, the the Yamuna started drying up, Govardhan started throwing its rocks down to the ground and shrinking. Everybody was just wandering around in a stupor, on the verge of death. This was the condition of Vrindavan immediately after Krishna going to Mathura. And then when Krishna went off to Dwarka, he took all the inhabitants of Vrajadham with him, or of Mathura with him, and the whole region became unpopulated. Now we'll read about that when we get to the Bhagavat Mahatmya, about how Vrindavan was left, the whole Vrajadham was left unpopulated after Krishna left the planet. But even while he had just gone to Mathura, the place was becoming desolate. But the amazing thing is, Akura arrives in the evening, and he notices everything's fine. Not what he expected. I'll read the verses that describe this. I'll read the English. Gokula resounded on all sides with the sound of bulls in rut fighting with one another for fertile cows, burdened by their udders, chasing after their calves, with the noise of milking, of the white calves jumping here and there, with this loud reverberation of flute playing. Not Krishna's flute, but the other Brajvasis are also playing flutes. With the singing of the all-auspicious deeds of Krishna and Balaram by the cowherd men and women, who made the village resplendent with their wonderful ornamented attire. The cowherd's homes in Gokula appeared most charming with their abundant paraphernalia for worship of the sacrificial fire. The sun, unexpected guests, the cows, the Brahmins, the forefathers, and the demigods. On all sides lay the flowering forest, echoing with the flocks of birds and swarms of bees, and beautified by its lakes crowded with swans, Karandava ducks, and bowers of lotuses. This is the culture of Raja. This is the atmosphere that Uddhava, the typical atmosphere that Uddhava saw when he arrived. We all have our own conditioning. So I was brought up in New York City. So, you know, the soot-covered streets, you know, the giant skyscrapers and bustling crowds. This is what I'm used to. Cars beep, you know, running up and down the street. This is, to me, is home. Someone else born up in, born, you know, brought up in a village in Bengal, he's got a different idea of what is normal human culture. But this is the highest culture. In Vaikuntha, there's all opulence, palaces, everyone has their own airplane, and unlimited access to mystic powers. They can practically create their own universes if they want, all the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. So much opulence and power. Vrindavan is a quite different picture. You know, although the Supreme Lord Personality of God is displaying his opulence even more in Vrindavan, it's disguised. The Madhurya eclipses the opulence, even though there's more opulence in Vrindavan. Just like the sun is in the sky, we don't see any stars. But there are as many stars in the sky during the day as the night. They're just invisible because the sun is bright. So there's more opulence in Vrindavan, but we don't see any of it, because the Madhurya, the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes, totally eclipses the opulence. We don't see it. It looks like a very ordinary place. Particularly, Sanatana Goswami remarks somewhere in Brihad Bhagavatam, that it looks just like Uttar Pradesh. Particular, you know, small region of north central India. But that's Krishna's choice. It's the other way around, that, you know, the area of Raja and the Uttar Pradesh in general are reflecting the presence of Raja. The original is Goloka, and that's reflected. But we'd see it the other way around. You know, it's amazing. God's favorite abode looks just like UP. But that's Krishna's choice. This is what pleases him most, to be in a cowherd village, where instead of cars running up and down the streets, the cow is coming home. Now, how is Uddhava seeing this when everybody's supposed to be on the verge of death, suffering from separation? Why is he seeing such a joyful, normal scene? Commentary says something here, purport, from the 10th canto. Although Gokula was merged in grief because of separation from Lord Krishna, the Lord expanded his internal potency to cover that particular manifestation of Raja and allow Uddhava to see the normal bustle and joy of Raja at sunset. Some explanation how this is possible. Jiva Goswami explains in the Krishna Sandarbha that Krishna has two different kinds of pastimes. His visible prakrita, his visible pastimes and his invisible pastimes. His invisible pastimes are eternal. In Vraja Dham, his pastimes are eternal, he's eternally present, and his intimate devotees are eternally present in Vraja Dham. But most people can't see that. It's invisible to them. To those who are not participants in those pastimes or have some special privilege to witness, they're not visible. But there's some difference between, and the visible pastimes occur at certain times. Krishna was visible on this earth 5,000 years ago for 125 years, a certain duration of time. There's the difference that Jiva Goswami explains between these two kinds of pastimes is that in the invisible aprakrita lila, Krishna can expand himself unlimitedly. He's not at all restricted by the limitations of time and space. He can reciprocate with all his devotees simultaneously. He can expand himself in any number of forms all at the same time. But when he manifests his visible pastimes, he chooses to conform to the restrictions of time and space. That means one thing at a time and one place at a time. If Krishna is someplace, he's not somewhere else. If he's with somebody, he's not with somebody else. You have to wait your turn in the prakrita lila, in the visible pastime. That's where the experience of separation comes from in the material world. When Krishna goes to Mathura, he's not in Vrindavan anymore, in his visible pastimes. But the complication is, for those who are actually pure, they continue to experience Krishna in his invisible pastimes. So the separation is not really completely separation. He never leaves Vrindavan. And those who are completely pure know that. They experience that. Still, the experience, the ecstasy of separation is there. But for materialists, he's gone. For those whose eyes are covered by Maya, you won't find Krishna in Vrindavan when he's not displaying his visible pastimes.
Is that the explanation when you say that in the Mathura, the pure residents, they let Krishna?
Yes, because... But everybody who's living in Vraja Dham now is a Paradeshi, came from someplace else. You know, 5,000 years ago the place was depopulated and repopulated. So all the current so-called Vrijabhasis weren't there. Their families were not there 5,000 years ago. Yeah, even newcomers, if they... Especially if you take birth and die in Vraj, then you go to Krishna. Even if you weren't there 5,000 years ago, or your family wasn't there 5,000 years ago. We don't care about family connection anyway. That's not spiritual qualification. People there may argue like that, you know, because I was here for 7 generations. I'm a real Vrijabhasi. And because you moved in only 2 generations ago, you're not. But that's just quibbling. And you can become a Vrijabhasi, even though you weren't born there, you can become one. Anyway, yes, please. Yes.
But in Dwarka, he has 16,000 fields, and he used to...
Yes. Yes. That's, you know, he can break the rules. General rule is one thing at a time, one place at a time. But no, Krishna is the supreme mystic. So even in his visible pastimes, he can perform this magic feat of being in 16,000 palaces simultaneously. But then every morning, when it's time for him to go to work, to go to the Sudharma Assembly Hall, he comes out of his 16,000 different palaces, and then you see only one Krishna walking down the street. There's only one Krishna that goes to the assembly hall, so he merges back into one. That's his mystic power. But the general principle of the visible pastimes is that he only performs one pastime at a time, one after another. That's because of our material vision. We can't deal with simultaneous appearances. We can only conceive of one thing at a time. So to not drive us crazy, Krishna simply shows one thing at a time. That's how he limits himself, or he limits how he shows himself when he appears publicly in his visible pastimes. Okay, but then he also plays some tricks. You know, he marries 16,000 queens simultaneously, and is in all 16,000. Most people can't see that, though. Those who are in one palace, the attendants and devotees who are with Krishna in one palace, don't know that he's also in all the other palaces. Only a few people like Narada could see that he's simultaneously in all the all the different queens. Okay. All right. Okay. So now, so it's possible. This explains how at least it's possible that Uddhava was given a glimpse of the invisible pastimes when he arrived that evening. Because in the visible pastimes, Vrindavan was already becoming desolate. Jamuna dried up, Govardhan shrinking, everyone just, you know, lamenting and on the verge of death. But that's not what he saw. He saw things as normal, which means he saw the aprakriti, the invisible pastimes, at least for a moment when he arrived. Yeah. No, not at the same time, because the visible pastimes are not happening anymore. They just occur on schedule. 5,000 years ago, and so for the last, you know, 4,980, whatever, you know, 4,900 years, they haven't been going on. But the invisible pastimes are still going on. They always go on. Is that right? That's the visible pastimes. That means the visible pastimes. When he's publicly seen by everyone. Everyone who's there can see him. But not now. So his visible pastimes are not going on now, but the invisible pastimes are still going on. Where? Goloka, generally it's just that distinction is not there in Goloka. Krishna's always present. So that's something special about the material in Krishna Vrindavan, and, you know, on this earth, is that there is the distinction of two different kinds of pastimes. So there's feelings of separation, even in the spiritual world. So the queens and the gopis, they can feel separation. Krishna's standing right in front of them, and they can feel separation. There's separation in actual separation. There's separation in anticipation also, that Krishna can leave us any minute. So they have feelings of separation, even though there's no separation. Just like there are no demons. Actually, that may be contradicted, but generally there are no demons in the spiritual world. But everyone's in anxiety that the Kamsa can come, or Keshi can come. They generally don't come. There are no demons in the spiritual world, actually. But still, the devotees are afraid that they're coming. So there's no real separation. Still, they're feeling separation. Okay, anyway, Uddhava arrives. And first thing he does, which is the proper etiquette, is he goes to visit Nanda and Yashoda, Krishna's parents. Krishna told him to do that. Talk to my parents and then go to the gopis. So, Nanda Maharaj embraced him. Nanda certainly is the elder, but the elder has the right to embrace the young man comes and offers respects, and then the elder embraces him. That's proper greeting. But he also worshipped Uddhava as non-different from Krishna. Not only because he looked like Krishna, but he's empowered by Krishna. What he says is what Krishna said. He's delivering Krishna's message. So therefore, Nanda worshipped Uddhava. He worshipped him by sitting him down, letting him rest, and feeding him nicely. This is how you worship a guest. It's nice, you can, you know, offer a ghee lamp, but the person's thirsty and hungry, better give them something to drink and eat, you know, but rather than just wave lamps. And he also arranged for a massage. Although, because Nanda is the elder, it would have been embarrassing and not really proper for him to do the massage. He had a servant massage Uddhava. It enters some discussion. How's everybody doing? How's Vasudev? It's very good that Kamsa has now been killed. He always hated the Yadus. Good thing he's gone. Then he gets to the point. Does Krishna remember us? And is he going to come back or not? This is what the parents are concerned about. You know, has he forgotten us already? And is he going to break his promise, or is he actually going to come back or not? And then Nanda starts remembering how Krishna saved them from so many dangers. And how, when they simply remember about Krishna like this, everything is all right. You know, even though they're suffering torment of separation, they feel relieved just by remembering Krishna. This is Krishna's trick. The torment of separation forces you to remember Krishna. Your only resort is to remember Krishna in his absence. But that intense remembrance is the cause of the greatest ecstasy. So Krishna gives that pain to his devotees to give them the greatest ecstasy. Okay, I'm going to run out of time. You've already read it briefly. Nanda Maharaj then recognizes that Krishna and Balaram must be the Supreme Lord, or at least some great demigods, empowered demigods. And then Uddhava starts replying to Nanda and says, yes, Krishna and Balaram are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of creation. And of course they'll come back, they promised. And especially you should understand that Krishna is the Super Soul, is in everybody's heart. So this is sort of a trick, it's sort of deceptive. Yes, I promise they'll come back, because he's present in your heart. He's everywhere. Now, actually, Krishna's not going to come back, but how can Uddhava say that? So he says, oh yes, he's present everywhere, he's in your heart, he's in everybody's heart. He's already with you. Don't, you know, there is no separation. He's giving them philosophy. What they want is Krishna, not philosophy. This is the same. This is the message Krishna gave. This is what Krishna told Uddhava to tell. You know, tell him I'm the Super Soul, that I'm in everybody's heart. Uddhava is going to tell this to the gopis too, but they're not going to be so easily convinced. Anyway, Uddhava is risking being rejected as another dry scholar. You know, just like when Krishna, before the Rasa dance, tried to give this philosophy to the gopis. You know, go home to your husbands. This is not proper. You shouldn't be out here in the middle of the night with somebody else. And don't worry, you'll get myself satiated. I'm the Super Soul. I'm in your hearts. So you can just go home. And they would not accept that Vedanta philosophy from Krishna. So Uddhava is risking also being rejected by Krishna's parents and the gopis. But what can he do? This is the message that Krishna gave him to deliver. Actually, the gopis, or rather Krishna's parents, are very happy. Uddhava is very happy. It's described, he's happy to see Nanda Maharaj's distress and Yashoda's distress, because he knows that this is not really an unfortunate condition, that their distress is the highest ecstasy. So Uddhava is pleased to see the condition of Nanda and Yashoda, their anxiety. And they're pleased, even though he's telling them what sounds like dry philosophy, because he's come from Krishna. He's as good as Krishna himself. They're satisfied. And then he spends the night. When he arrived, because of the dust from all the cows coming home, nobody noticed his chariot. But in the morning, they saw the chariot parked outside Nanda Maharaj's house. And the gopis especially were wondering, is this a Krura again? And then they saw, no, this is Uddhava, Krishna's friend. So tomorrow you should read for tonight all the verses from chapter 47 that are in the pink booklet.
This is for a day after tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Phil.
Krishna is going to, in the morning, rather Uddhava in the morning is going to meet with the gopis. And then he'll get the, he's a great student of Brihaspati, he'll get the real lesson of his life from meeting the gopis. Okay, any comments on that? Yes? Some of, well, Bali Maharaj, Prahlad. Prahlad is the chief, and then his grandson Bali, others. The son of Twashta, Vitrasura, the great devotees. Yeah, Prabhupada has made many asuras into Vaishnavas. Yeah, we're all coming from, many of us from Rakshasa backgrounds. Prabhupada's making us into Vaishnavas. Yeah, this Western culture is demoniac culture. It's Rakshasa culture. Now, we're not literally eating our babies yet, but we're eating everything else, devouring one another. This is Rakshasa culture. Okay, so, still another passage to read for today from Bhagavatamrita. I was just reading yesterday, finishing up yesterday's passage. From back to the first part, chapter 6, we already read how Narada Muni came to visit the Yadus in Dwarka. They accepted his praise. Yes, Krishna is so amazing, and you're Narada Muni, the greatest sage. Whatever you say must be true. We can't contradict you. We have to accept the praise. But the best of us is Uddhava. Go see him. Don't stay and flatter us. You go meet Uddhava. He's the greatest devotee of Krishna. So Narada now is very excited to meet Uddhava. So he comes to Krishna's house, if I'm right.
Yeah.
One of Krishna's palaces where Uddhava is attending Krishna, but he wants to meet Uddhava. Excuse me, find it. Okay, here. So Narada arrives.
What he sees when he arrives at Krishna's palace in Dwarka. That day, Lord Krishna was for some reason disturbed in mind and asleep in the inner quarters. This is during the morning, late in the morning, Krishna's still asleep. Apparently something wrong with him. And Uddhava had left him and sat down nearby on a terrace at the edge of the palace. There Uddhava was joined by Baladev, Devaki, and Rohini, and queens of Krishna like Rukmini and Satyabhama, as well as various maidservants and other ladies, including Kamsa's mother, Padmavati, a lady who had the habit of making public gossip out of Krishna's personal affairs. Yeah. All of them, you can read about this in the first volume of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. All of them sat there silent in shock. They saw that Sri Narada had arrived and that he was acting strange. Commentary. These devotees, who would regularly take part in Krishna's daily palace activities, were dismayed that Krishna was lying in bed, way past the time he normally rose. It was obvious to them that something was seriously wrong, but they couldn't discern exactly what. Nevertheless, they now had to attend to Narada's arrival. Narada's described that as he was walking through the streets to find Krishna's palace, he was just in total ecstasy, just stumbling. He didn't know which way to go, because he had been to Krishna's palace as many times before. He found his way, but he was practically blind and just stumbling like a drunkard in the streets. So this is the condition in which he arrived, and they saw that he was, disturbed. Standing up, they brought him carefully. This is Balaram, Devaki, Rohini, Uddhava is also there, Satyabhama. Standing up, they brought him carefully to where they had been sitting. They took a moment to restore him to a condition closer to normal and wiped dry his face, wet with tears of love. Then they spoke to him simply and gently. They said, "We have never seen you behave like this before. What is this sudden change in you, dear Brahmana? Please sit here quietly for a moment." Sri Parikshit,
ordinary people, if Narada Muni shows up, they'll worship him and bow down. But this is very exalted devotees. They treat him practically as an equal.
That's proper. Sri Parikshit said, Narada replied in a choking voice, tears flowing from his eyes. As he began to speak, he opened his eyes with difficulty and bowed down to offer respects. He was trembling, and the hairs on his body stood erect. Sri Narada said, please arrange for me to meet with Uddhava. Krishna's there, but he's asking to meet with Uddhava. Please arrange for me to meet with Uddhava, the only true object of exquisite good fortune. Or else, let me have from his feet one particle of dust. Then alone, my heart will be at peace. Narada talking. Commentary. Uddhava was present right in front of Narada, but the sage in his ecstasy failed to notice him. Narada first begged to be brought before Uddhava, but then reconsidered and thought himself probably unworthy to meet him. By explaining the demands of his heart, Narada answered the questions about the cause of his strange behavior. Going on, Narada says, he, Uddhava, has received an abundance of our Lord's mercy never gained by the Lord's other servants in the past or even now. Because Uddhava is the greatest of all Vaishnavas, the Lord himself calls Uddhava one of his own special expansions. Commentary. In the 11th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, 11.16.29, when Lord Krishna, speaking to Uddhava, describes his own opulent expansions in the material world, he declares Uddhava his representative among the Vaishnavas. Vasudevo Bhagavatam, Tvam tu Bhagavateshvaham. Among those entitled to the name Bhagavan, I am Vasudeva. And you, Uddhava, indeed represent me among the devotees. Next verse. Narada talking. No one has ever been as dear to the Lord. Neither the Lord's direct sons like Brahma, nor friends like Shiva, nor brothers like Balaram, nor the goddess Rama, or the Lord's other wives. Not even his own unique transcendental body is as dear as Uddhava. Commentary. Now how can he say this? Is this going too far? The original Sankarsana is Sri Balaram, Lord Krishna's brother and constant companion. Narada can dare to say that Uddhava is more dear to Krishna even than Balaram and other supreme persons, because Krishna himself has said this to Uddhava. Natata me priyatama atma yonir na shankaraha na cha sankarsana na shrir naivatma chayata bhavan. My dear Uddhava, this is 11th canto, chapter 14. My dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarsana, the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own self, as is dear to me as you. Krishna said it. According to the commentary of Srila Sridhar Swami, when Lord Krishna in the Bhagavatam spoke this verse to Uddhava, originally he meant to say, as dear to me as my devotee. But in the ecstasy of his friendship with Uddhava, he at the last moment switched for the word bhakta, the word bhavan, you. The Lord's original intention, however, had been to glorify all of his pure devotees. Srila Sanatana Goswami, therefore, earlier in his commentary on Brihad Bhagavatamrita, chapter 3 of the first part, cited the same verse in praise of Prahlad. And now he cites it again to praise Uddhava. Next verse. Narada speaking. The Supreme Lord's own words disclosed in the Puranas tell the abounding glories of Uddhava's good fortune. Those words born of Sri Krishna's causeless mercy are unlike any others heard in this world. The Yadava heroes now tell these words in songs. They sing the glories of Uddhava. Alas, when those words enter the home of my heart through the gateway of the ears, they steal all my wealth of sobriety. Puranas. Uddhava is glorified in some of the Puranas. We're going to read from the Bhagavat Mahatmya from the Skanda Purana on the last day of this course. So there are various places where Uddhava is glorified in the Puranas. Commentary. Narada is an authorized acharya of the Vaishnava Sampradaya. For him, therefore, the highest evidence by which to prove anything is the expressed opinion of the personality of Godhead and the effect of the Lord's words on the thought and behavior of his devotees. In regard to Uddhava, Krishna has stated his opinion clearly. My dear Uddhava, 11th canto, chapter 11. My dear Uddhava, O beloved of the Yadu dynasty, because you are my servant, well-wisher and friend, I shall now speak to you the most confidential knowledge. Please hear as I explain these great mysteries to you. And then Krishna says in the third canto, Uddhava is not, we've read this verse a few times already, Uddhava is not inferior to me in any way because he is not affected by the modes of material nature. Therefore, he may remain in this world to disseminate specific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. So Narada is saying how when these words glorifying Uddhava enter my heart, they rob me of all my sobriety. Commentary, Sanatana Goswami, actually this doesn't come from Sanatana Goswami. Anyway, the commentary says, professional thieves in ancient India were proficient in using narcotic powders to put unsuspecting householders into a stupor so that their houses could be easily robbed. Sometimes this happens on the trains, too. We can read the details of these methods in minor literary works, such as Dandi's Dashakumar Charita. Narada alludes to such criminal skills in describing the looting of his own heart by the glories of Uddhava. Okay, then Sri Parikshit said, he's narrating to his mother, impelled by great respect for Narada, Uddhava suddenly stood up, held Narada's feet, and embraced them. Aware of what Narada was thinking, Uddhava remembered many devotees who had received the Lord's special mercy. Uddhava meditated on those devotees, their love for the Lord, and the wealth of their loving ecstasies. He felt distress, thinking himself fallen, and cried helplessly. Only when with some effort, he was able to regain his composure. Then he became joyful and spoke to the sage, moved by the sattvika emotion of jealousy. This is what's going on here is quite complex, and big commotion is going on here. Commentary: Uddhava knew that Narada was thinking about how to find the best recipient of the Supreme Lord's favor. He intelligently deduced this from the way Narada was acting. This logical conclusion led Uddhava to remember many famous Vaishnavas of the past who had enjoyed the Lord's favor. The ecstasies of pure Vaishnavas, which appear on their bodies as perspiration, trembling, haripilation, goosebumps, and so on, are the priceless treasure of those Vaishnavas. A treasure whose value can be estimated only by Vaishnavas following in their footsteps. As Uddhava meditated on the great fortune of Krishna's devotees, he felt undeserving. He experienced the essential devotional prerequisite of dainya, utter humility. For Uddhava to regain his composure required great effort, plus the help of Narada, Balaram, and the others. Uddhava was next confronted by the bhava of jealousy, intolerance of others' good fortune. Uddhava was, this transcendental jealousy, however, was Sattvika, born of pure goodness, untouched by the influence of passion and ignorance. Therefore, it was a cause of joy. Having no trace of hatred, this ecstatic jealousy gave no distress to Uddhava or anyone else. Rather, in this jealousy, he entered even deeper into the trance of his attraction to Krishna. Just as devotees in the conjugal mood become even more blissfully attached to Krishna when jealous of his other lovers. Next verse. Sriman Uddhava said, O mighty one, talking to Narada, knower of everything, most truthful speaker, greatest of sages, you are the master who teaches the means and the end of bhakti, devotional service to the Supreme Lord. All you have just said about me and more is self-evident to me. I knew it was true before you said it. And so did the others. Commentary. The words, O knower of everything, hint that Narada is aware of who indeed are Krishna's most favored devotees, led by the divine Srimati Radharani. In Uddhava's judgment, Narada is the best of eloquent speakers like Yudhishthira, and the best of eminent sages like Vyasadeva. Of course, of all who attempt to glorify the Supreme Lord and his devotees, Narada is the most competent. Uddhava therefore feels obliged to accept anything Narada says is true, even something awkward to hear like praise of himself. Uddhava acknowledges Narada as his Prabhu, or spiritual master, calls him Prabhu. When Narada was traveling throughout the material universe, everybody he went to rebuked him for praising him. No one wanted to hear himself praised, and argued against Narada. No, I'm not the best devotee. I'm no devotee at all. And then told him to go to somebody else. And suggested, but when he went to the Yadus in Dwarka in the spiritual world, the Yadavas said, "You're the most perfect sage, we have to accept what you say is true." But when he went to Uddhava, you hear what Uddhava says. I knew it before you told me. Now, this is all true. But that's a sign of the greatest humility. This is, you know, transcendental, not to be imitated. Yeah. Okay. Hare Krishna. Right. Okay. A few more verses and we can stop. When I saw on my recent trip to Vraja, took my pride in my special good fortune and suddenly crushed it to dust. Commentary. Uddhava cannot easily describe his impressions of Vraja. Therefore, he simply says what I experienced. Before he visited Vraja, his pride in being favored by Krishna had been as great as Mount Meru. But when he saw the greater devotion of the Vrajvasis, his pride was quickly reduced to a pile of dust. He says he is proud. Not that we should judge him as proud, but that's what he thinks of himself. He says, since then I have understood the amazing sweetness of Krishna's mercy, of love for him, and of those who possess that love. Just by what I saw in Vraja, I came to be most blessed. I was swept away in an ocean of ecstasy, thinking myself completely favored by the Lord, a recipient of his most extreme mercy. Okay, well, got another 3 or 4 minutes? I'll be the last one. Okay. Everyone here knows very well what I then sang in my ecstasy, what desires I had, and what I did when he was in Vrindavan. Better for now not to speak on these matters anymore, any further. O best of sages, I bow down to you again and again, and I beseech you, please curb your eagerness to relish those various affairs. Why is that? Commentary. Uddhava's songs of ecstasy in Vraja are recorded by Sri Shukadeva Goswami in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. First verse, 2 verses from the 47th chapter. Among all persons on earth, these cowherd women alone have actually perfected their embodied lives, for they have achieved the perfection of unalloyed love for Lord Govinda. Their pure love is hankered after by those who fear material existence, by great sages, and by ourselves as well. This is spoken by Uddhava. For one who has tasted the narrations of the Infinite Lord, what is the use of taking birth as a high-class Brahmin, or even as Lord Brahma himself? Then the other famous verse, spoken by Uddhava. The gopis of Vrindavan have given up the association of their husbands, sons, and other family members, who are very difficult to give up, and have forsaken the path of chastity to take shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, Krishna, which one should search for by Vedic knowledge. Oh, let me be fortunate enough to be one of the bushes, creepers, or herbs in Vrindavan, because the gopis trample them and bless them with the dust of their lotus feet. Therefore, anyone who is familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam knows very well what Uddhava said and did in Vraja, and what confidential ambitions he revealed there. It is no secret that Uddhava discovered in Sri Vrajadam that the gopis, headed by Sri Radhika, are much more intimately favored by Krishna than himself. But in the present company, Uddhava wanted to avoid pursuing these topics. Sri Satyabhama and other queens of Dwarka who were there might be displeased to hear the gopis' super excellence described. And Sri Krishna himself, being reminded of the gopis, might be driven into even worse distress. Narada, however, having come to Dwarka just to hear about the recipients of Krishna's greatest mercy, was intent on fulfilling his mission. Uddhava thus submitted to him a humble request that he bring his eagerness under control to avoid undesirable consequences. Okay. And then next class we'll read about Uddhava's discussion with the gopis. Okay, so we'll have to stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam.